I want to speak about one major thing in the Sedra, which I may speak about again in the other class in regards to Sfiras HaOmer. But it won't hurt you to hear it twice. I've heard it more than twice for me, so what I'm going to tell you, I think, is of utmost importance for the rest of your life. That's why I'm not afraid to say it again, that you'll hear it twice if I decide to speak to the other class about this idea as part of Sfiras HaOmer. We're not going to connect it to Sfiras HaOmer. We're just going to understand it in light of the parasha. The parasha starts out in Bechukosai Telechu. If you walk in my chukim, Rashi says, it doesn't mean keeping the mitzvahs. It means sheyiyu amelim batorah. You should put effort into Torah. Amelim batorah. If you do that, then the Rabbanu Shalom promises every good thing, Yemosa Moshiach. If you don't, im lo sishmuli, shelo yu amelim batorah, if you will not put effort into Torah, then you will fall down 7 levels and go into Golus. What are the 7 levels? Don't write them, because I'm going to go over them one by one in great detail. The 7 levels are, if you don't toil and put effort into Torah, then you will not fulfill the mitzvahs. You won't learn. First level down, you won't learn. You won't fulfill the mitzvahs. You'll be disgusted with people who keep mitzvahs. You will hate the chachamim. You'll try to stop people from keeping mitzvahs. You'll deny the validity of the mitzvahs. And finally, kofar be'ikr, you'll deny Hashem. Just from not being omel batorah, putting effort into Torah. Now, what does that mean? So the simple meaning is, a man who is learning Torah 22 hours a day with his feet in ice water, keeping himself up, that's amelus batorah. And that is one way of understanding amelus batorah. But I think there is another significant way of understanding putting effort into Torah that applies to everybody. Men, women, everybody. And that is the following. This world is a world of movement. Either you're moving in one direction or you're moving in the other direction. You can't stand still. Somebody once told me this world is like a down escalator that you're trying to run up. Children do it all the time. Adults would like to do it, but they hold themselves back. You ever run up a down escalator?
Yeah.
What happens if you stop? You go down. If you put in some effort, you may stand still. If you put in a lot of effort, you get a little higher. Unless you put in effort in this world, you will go down. You constantly have to be moving. Either you're moving ahead or you're moving backwards. You're regressing. Either you're progressing or you're regressing. Nothing in this world is at rest. This table is not at rest. It's moving together with all of us 1,000 miles an hour on the axis of the earth, around its axis. It's moving in space around the sun with the earth. It's moving with the solar system, right, also in space. And every atom in this table is moving at the speed of light. The electrons are moving at the speed of light. If they would stop moving, they'd stop existing. So this is a world of movement. And if you're not moving ahead, you're moving backwards. You can't stand still. And therefore, Torah demands effort. Effort meaning change in a positive direction, improvement. You can't stagnate when it comes to Torah. You can't just practice what I call status quo Judaism. This is the way I did it last year. This is the way I did it last week. This is the way my parents did it. This is the way I'm going to do it. You have to constantly be improving. Your character, your shmiras hamitzvahs, your limud haTorah has to constantly improve. And if you ever reach a level in life where you don't want to improve, where you just want to maintain status quo, inevitably you're going to go down these 7 levels until you're a kofar be'ikr. Now, that does not sound realistic. Because I know a lot of people who practice status quo Judaism, and they're not apikorsim, they're not kofrim be'ikr, they're nice frum people, keep Shabbos, never improved anything, this is the way they did it last week, this is the way they do it next week, they never work on themselves, they never learn anything new, and they're nice frum people. So what are you going to tell me? No, give them time, next year they're going to be kofrim be'ikr. I know people have been like that for three generations. They're still not kofrim be'ikr. What are you going to tell me? No, deep down they don't believe in anything. Can't believe that. People are nice from people. So what does it mean? So let me tell you what I think it means. And it is so frighteningly true and accurate that it is frightening because it applies to all of us. I've said this shiur thousands of times all over the world to people that were fresh Balei Tshuva, to people that were Rosh Hashivas and Beis Yaakov principals and teachers here in America, whatever. And I haven't found anybody who can't relate to it yet. That means it applies to all of us. Let me tell you what I think it means and why it's something that you should take to heart in understanding how to lead your lives as Torah Jews in the future. Start with a story and base what I'm going to say on this story, even though the person in the story is true. The person in the story went on to be a person who put effort in Torah and really improved and was an Ole. But at the time, that was not the case. When I went to Miami to be a Rav, so I noticed that there were many frum people in the community, a lot of older people, retired people, that never had a real Jewish education because either they grew up in America, and in those days there was no day schools or yeshivas or whatever for the most part in America, and they never had a yeshiva education, or they were Holocaust survivors or children of Holocaust survivors and never had a chance to have, when they're youth, a Jewish education. They were frum because they grew up in frum families or whatever, but they never really learned halacha. So they kept Shabbos, they didn't drive, they didn't answer the phone, didn't turn on lights. That's what they knew about Shabbos. But the intricacies of Hilchos Shabbos, they had no idea about. They didn't know about Borer and Tochein and all these halachas that you're taught. So I figured it would be very beneficial for them to learn Hilchos Shabbos. So between Mincha and Maariv, there's a slot for a shiur that inevitably has to be, because you have to wait between Mincha and Maariv. So 15-20 minutes every day we would learn Hilchos Shabbos, one malacha after another, whatever. And I remember we were up to the malacha Borer. Now Borer is a very intricate halacha with a lot of details, right? You'll excuse the pun, it's a very nitpicking halacha, okay? And all the details, whether you're taking with a kli or by hand, the good from the bad from the good, for immediate consumption or not. And we were learning the halachas of Borer, and somebody fell into this shiur by accident. What happened? He was a middle-aged, maybe a little bit younger, professional, and he never came regularly to Mincha and Maariv. But he had a yard site for a parent. And he was intending to come from Maariv. But he thought that Maariv was earlier than it was. So instead of coming from Maariv, he came 10-15 minutes early, walked into the shul, and at that time when you walked into my shul, you walked into the shir. There was no hallway or whatever. You walked directly into the shul. There he was. He was too polite to walk out and come back 10 minutes later. He sat down. And I see, we're going through all these intricate halachas, and I see his eyes are bulging. After the shiur, he comes over to me, and he says, "Rabbi, are there really people who do all of this?" Now, I was 6 months out of the kolo. I didn't think there were people who didn't do all of this, and he didn't think there were people who do all of this. Let's take this person as an example. Here's a guy, he's a nice Shomer Shabbos person, right, frum person, considers himself an Orthodox Jew, but the details of Borer, that's like beyond him. Right? That's too much. That's not something that he is interested in doing, nor interested in learning about, because he doesn't want to do it. So he'd rather know less about it or whatever. There are people like that want to maintain status quo, not grow, not find out anything new. This is the way I did it last week. This is the way I'm doing it next week. And you want to be comfortable. It's uncomfortable to change, and especially to constantly change and improve is very uncomfortable. People like to be comfortable. So I found my niche, and that's what I do. That's the way I did it last week. That's the way my parents did it. That's the way I'm going to do it. Very nice. There's only one problem. That if you're frum, and you believe in all of this, it's got to make you feel guilty. And feeling guilty is very uncomfortable. So there's a conflict over here. On the one hand, you want to be comfortable and not improve. On the other hand, you don't want to feel guilty about it. So those seven levels that we mentioned are seven defense mechanisms which the Satan created in order to enable a person who does not want to improve, doesn't want to put effort into his Torah. Effort means improvement, change. That's effort. It's a very, very difficult. It's more difficult than putting your feet in ice water and learning 22 hours to change. It's very difficult. Somebody who doesn't want to change, doesn't want to improve, but doesn't want to feel guilty, those are the seven levels that we're talking about. And now let me explain to you them in detail. The first level is don't learn. If you want to maintain status quo in your Yiddishkeit and not feel guilty about it, the first thing you have to do is not learn. That doesn't mean not learn anything. You could learn Hashkafa, Medrash, Zohar. Just don't learn anything about Hilchos Shabbos, because you may find out too much about this Borer thing, and you won't be able to fool yourself into thinking that it doesn't apply to you, so why bother with it, right? You'll find out that it does. You could make believe to think that, well, Borer probably has to do with farmers, has to do with factories. What in the world could I be over Borer in my little kitchen and dining room? So you can lull yourself into a false sense of security as long as you don't learn too much. The less you know, the more ignorant you are is bliss, right? If you don't want to know that you're speaking Lashon Hara, the best thing is not to learn the laws of Lashon Hara so you don't think that you're doing anything wrong. Well, this couldn't be Lashon Hara. And if you don't learn, you could fool yourself into thinking that what you're speaking is not Lashon Hara. Once you learn the halachas, different story. So the first thing to be able not to improve and yet not to feel guilty is don't learn. That's first level down. You don't learn. Don't learn anything about this. Stay away from it, because you may find out too much and you'll feel guilty. Or you'll be forced to change. You don't want to change. That's also uncomfortable. Second level down. You don't learn, you don't do. If you don't know, you can't do it properly. So if you don't know what Borer is, you're going to end up being over the Isser of Borer, not even knowing that there's anything wrong. So let's take this person. I'll be the person. So I'm the person, doesn't want to improve this area of Borer. I don't want to know anything about this Borer thing. The less I know about it, the better it is, because then I can convince myself that nothing that I could possibly do could be Borer. So I don't learn. So then one day I'm passing by a store, and I like to eat fish with bones. Not me, but the person in the story. Okay. Right, I like to eat fish with bones. I don't like a filter fish. And it's a bother to start taking these bones out of the fish on Shabbos. I pass by a store, and I see they have this contraption that somebody made, hand-operated contraption, where you put fish into it, and you pull down the lever, and it eviscerates the fish. It takes out the bones in one swoop. I say, wow, this is great for Shabbos. Right, I'm going to buy this machine. Not only that, I'm going to silver plate it and inscribe it L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. And every Friday night, my wife is going to bring all the fish from all the meals. We're going to ceremoniously put it into this contraption, and I'm going to say L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh and pull down the lever, and all the bones are going to be separated at once, and then we have an easy time of eating this fish on Shabbos. He has just transgressed a Torah prohibition, according to everybody. He did it with a kli for not immediate use, and taking the bones out of the fish. Everything that could be wrong is wrong, but he doesn't know. He didn't learn. So he thinks he's being mechabed the Shabbos, the covered Shabbos Kodesh, and he's over in Issa D'Oraisa being mechal Shabbos. So you don't learn, you don't do. Okay, now, but he's very comfortable, right? Not doing anything wrong. No reason to know about this Borer thing. next level down. That can continue until one day your neighbor invites you, or my neighbor invites me, to spend Friday night meal with him. And he's a little bit more knowledgeable and a little bit more medaktik in Hilchot Shabbos. And he also likes to eat fish with bones. So they serve the fish, and I say, ooh, too bad I didn't bring my professional bone plucker with me. I would have made the meal much easier. And I see that my friend, I'm ready to dig into the fish and take out the bones with my fork, and I see that my neighbor is studying the fish, looking at it from this angle, another angle, picking up his fork, putting down his fork, and I begin to feel guilty, because there must be something to do with Borer of how to get those bones out, and he's looking to see to take the fish from the bones of the fish, with a fork, without a fork. He's making all these calculations, and I'm getting to feel really guilty because I don't really care about this. I'm getting ready to eat the fish and take the bones out. So he's making me feel guilty. So I have to go down now to level number 3. Level number 3 is called Moes Ba'acherim Ha'osim, being disgusted with people who keep mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. So I look at this person, and I say to myself, so I don't want to feel guilty, this is all subconscious. I look at my neighbor, I say, you know, this is ridiculous. This is not normal. People don't study their fish before they eat it. You eat the fish. This is fanaticism. This is achnyok. This is shachor. Whatever, you pick the language, there's a word in that language that describes somebody that's doing what you don't want to do and making him into a monster. So this guy's a fanatic. This is fanaticism. This is not normal. This is off the wall. The guy's nuts. Nobody studies their fish. This is not what you have to do. I just want to be frum. I just want to be, what's it called, do what the halacha is. I don't want to be a fanatic. This is fanaticism. Studying your fish and deciding to take the bones of fish, that's fanatic. So now I don't feel guilty anymore. I don't want to be a fanatic. I don't want to be a chnyok. I just want to be a normal person. Normal people don't study their fish and decide. They take the fish and the bones and with the fork, without the fork. I go to home, go to sleep, get a good night's sleep. I don't feel guilty. I've now made my neighbor into a monster when it comes to Borer, right? So I don't feel guilty anymore, because anybody who does these things is fanatic, not normal. I get up in the morning, I make a bracha, shalo asani chnyok, and I feel great. I'm down already to the third level. I make a monster out of people who do what I don't want to do, because now I don't feel guilty, because they're crazy. It's not normal to do these things. Next, go to shul, Shabbos morning, and the rabbi gets up to speak. And he says, you know, I've noticed that we have some very nice, fine Shomer Shabbos people in this kehillah who don't know an inkling about Hilchot Shabbos, like Borer. Oh no, I gotta sit here and listen to this rabbi talk about Borer. I don't want to know about Borer. I don't want to hear. Now I have to go down to level number 4. Level number 4 is Sonei Es HaChachomim. I have to hate the rabbis. What does that mean? My conscience won't accept that the rabbi's a fanatic, because he's my rabbi. So that can't be. So that's not going to work. So now I look at the rabbi and I say like this. I know what's coming. He's going to start talking about Borer. And all this is subconscious. And I know I'm going to start feeling guilty. I don't want to know about this Borer thing. So what do? I can't impugn what the rabbi is going to say. I can't say, well, the rabbi doesn't know what he's talking about. So I say the following. You know what? It's not that I don't want to listen to Torah. I love Torah. I'd listen to Torah, but not from that mouth. That rabbi is not a mensch. Why not? 50 years ago, he passed my grandmother in the street one day, and he didn't say hello. He's an animal. He's a behemoth. He's not a mensch. From that mouth, I wouldn't listen to the Ten Commandments. Nothing. Not that Chas V'Shalom, I don't want to listen to Torah, but not from that person. You can't necessarily impugn what the person's saying, but you can always impugn the person. And what happens if the rabbi did say hello to your grandmother, or you didn't have a grandmother? There's something else. You say, well, that rabbi, he's in it for the money. Look at that fancy car he drives. Or, that rabbi's a schlepper. Look at the jalopy that he drives. You can always find something to impugn the person and say, It's not that I don't want to listen to Torah, but not from that mouth. If he makes me feel guilty, then I have to put him on the blacklist. It's all subconscious. And if you don't think that's true, I'll tell you a true story. When I was a rabbi in Miami, my beginning was very, very young, and I had a balabas who was a professional, who was about 10 years older than me, and he didn't like me. Now, that's not unusual for Rabbanim or anybody in the public eye, right? Sometimes people have good reasons not to like people. They did something, whatever. And the people who didn't like me, I knew why not. I knew why they didn't like me. This guy couldn't figure it out. I never did anything that I remembered to him that he shouldn't like, and he didn't like me in a big way. Until it came to the point where I thought, you know what, maybe I murdered his mother and forgot about it, because he really doesn't like me. But then I realized he doesn't like his mother either, so that wouldn't have made him not like me. And I felt intimidated to confront him, to find out what the problem was, because he was older than me and a professional, until I didn't have a choice. It was 20 minutes before Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur, and I said to myself, you know, maybe you really did something to this person you don't remember, and he has a legitimate complaint against you because he really doesn't like you. And maybe you're going to go through Yom Kippur, you never asked him Mechila, and who knows what, you know, your whole Yom Kippur could be ruined. So I had no choice, and we had a break before Ne'ilah, and I called him over privately, sat next to him, and I said, look, I get the feeling that you don't like me in a big way. And I don't remember exactly what I did to deserve that. I'm sure I must have done something, but I don't remember what it was. So if you'll remind me, I'd be happy to apologize, and we could go into friends, as friends, into Ne'ilah. He looks me straight in the eye. I could see it like it's happening now. This was, I don't know how many years ago. He says, Rabbi, I hate your guts. Okay, that's just what I had to hear right before Ne'ilah and Yom Kippur. I said, okay, you got it out of your system. Why? What did I do? He said, I'll tell you, after you finish your drushes on Shabbos, I feel guilty. I thought to myself, I guess I'm doing my job. I didn't say that to him. So I said, look, that's not the intention. I don't want to make you feel guilty. If that's what the drushes make you feel guilty, and because of that, you hate my guts. I said, why don't you get up before the drushes starts? Don't make it obvious. Go to the bathroom, go take a walk, get some fresh air, and come back when it's finished. Don't make it obvious that you're walking out. That wouldn't be nice. But that's okay with me. If that's what happened, go, don't stay for the drasha, take a walk, whatever. Don't make it obvious, and fine. Fine, made him feel good. And we shook hands, and we went into Ne'ilah's friends, and it lasted till about Erev Sukkos, I think. That was about it. Okay, in any case, that's the Metzius, though. Somebody makes you feel guilty, then you have to hate them, because otherwise you feel guilty. But if you can hate them and say they're not good people, then why should you feel guilty? Because what they say from that mouth, you don't want to listen to anything. He's not a mensch anyway, so why should I feel guilty what he says? Who cares what he says? So that's the next level down. Solnei es hachachomim. In order not to feel guilty, I have to start having a vendetta against the people who make me feel guilty because they're telling me what I don't want to hear because I don't want to improve. So I'm down now to the fourth level. No. The rabbi finishes speaking. Not everybody is like me, that I don't want to change, and I don't want to admit that I don't want to change, and I don't want to feel guilty, so I got to hate the rabbi. Some of my friends come to me, my friends, and they say, you know, the rabbi's right. We're from people. We believe in this. We keep Shabbos, and we don't have an inkling about the intricacies of Hilchos Shabbos. So we've gone to the Rav, and we've asked him to give us a shiur in Hilchos Shabbos every Wednesday. Would you like to join? Oh, no. It's the last thing in the world I want to do. I don't want to know about these things. I don't want to feel guilty. Again, it's all subconscious. What am I going to tell my friends? Oh, you're all a bunch of fanatics, and what's it called? I hate you all. No, they're my friends. So now I have to go down to level number 5. Level number 5 is Moneya Acherim Milasos. I try to prevent other people from keeping mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. Because if you do it, I feel guilty. So if nobody's doing it, then I don't feel guilty anymore. So I tell my friends the following. Ooh, you want to become more frum? You want to start learning Hilchos Shabbos, right? And be careful about Borer? Kol HaKavod. But let me warn you, it's a step in a very dangerous direction, because it's not going to end with Borer. Once you start going, you know, to become more from, it's never going to end. There's always something else. And you're going to end up being fanatics. I give you 2 weeks, right? If you start this program and start learning more and start doing more, I give you 2 weeks, you'll be taking a shower with a black hat on. No Shiloh. That's where you're headed, right? Your wives will be wearing their tichel down to their past their nose. It's pikuach nefesh. They won't be able to breathe. You are heading down a slippery slope. You're going to become fanatics, right? You're going to become these black Haredi people, right? And that never ends. It's inevitable. So don't, let me warn you, don't take this step in the wrong direction, right? You're going to become fanatics. So I try to convince them not to learn anymore, not to do anymore. Just do what we've done in the past. Be happy. Don't shake the, upset the apple cart. That's level number 5. With some of them I may be successful, and with some of them they're more honest, and they say it's not true. We're not going to become fanatics. We just want to do what's right. We want to learn what's right. Join us. Now I have to go down to level number 6. Level number 6 is kofer b'mitzvos. I deny the validity of the mitzvos. Now that sounds really harsh, but it's not. I don't deny the validity of all the mitzvahs, just the one that I don't want to do. So I tell my friends the following. Do you think if Borer was a real halacha, that I wouldn't be the first one to go to the shir and learn about it and keep it? Of course I would. But let me tell you, Borer is only a minig. And in our family, we didn't have that minig. Our minig wasn't to worry about Borer. Or, Borer is only a chumrah. We didn't have that chumrah. Or, Borer is only one opinion. I don't know who the other opinion is, but there's always another opinion we hold from him. So, I've reduced the halacha to a minig, not my minig. Or a chumrah, not my chumrah. Or one opinion, not my opinion. I hold from the other opinion. So now I don't feel guilty anymore. Right? Borer is not a halacha. Borer is just a minig. If you don't think that people think like that, right? I once had somebody I saw drive to my shul on Shabbos, park a block away, and walk the last block. So during the week, when I had him alone, I said to him privately, I said, you know, you probably think there's a mitzvah to walk on Shabbos. So you parked your block of your car a block away from the shul to be mekayim the mitzvah of walking on Shabbos, that extra block. I said, but you should know there's an issur of driving on Shabbos. You're not allowed to drive on Shabbos. It's usher. So parking a block away doesn't help. He said, no, Rabbi, you don't understand. My father parked in that place. My grandfather parked in that place. It's a minig in our family. That's where we park. Go fight with Minhagim. So it's only a minig. Borer, we don't have that minig. Like, murder, that's only a minig. We didn't have the minig about murdering. Well, Sirtzach, yeah, it's a chumrah. We weren't machmer like that. You can make anything into a chumrah, a minig, one opinion, and now you don't feel guilty. That's called kofer b'mitzvos. I deny the validity of the mitzvah. I turn it into a chumrah, a minig, and people say this all the time about things that are 100% halacha, right? But no, we weren't machmer. That's for machmirim. That's for people who have that minig. That's for people who hold from that opinion. We hold from the other opinion. Who's the other opinion? I don't know, but there's always another opinion. Whoever he is, I'm for him. So I now deny the validity of the mitzvah. I'm down to level 6. That's good until somebody brings me a Mishnah Berurah, a Kafah Chaim. So it's not Ashkenazim or Sfardim. Everybody holds that using a professional bone plucker on Shabbos is an Isser D'oraisa. Brings me Rabbi Eider in English. Everybody, right, from any Eda, this is not a minig. This is not a chumrah. This is not one opinion. Everybody holds that Borer is a halacha, and what you're doing on Shabbos is 100% osur min haTorah, according to everybody. Now I'm stuck. So I have to go down to level 7. Level 7 is called kofer be'ikr. Now that sounds really, really serious. It sounds like I deny God. I think you can understand it differently. What I say is the following. Okay, you got me. It's a halacha. But you know, I can't do everything. I got a life. I can let God interfere with my life up to a point. But there's a point where it's too much, and I just can't let God interfere with my life. I have more important things in life to worry about. Borer. What does that mean? I don't consider the mitzvah an ikar in my life. The mitzvah is something nice. If it's comfortable, I'll do it. If not, it's not an ikar. I have more important things in life to worry about. And if the mitzvah is not an ikar, then the mitzvah who commanded that mitzvah is not an ikar. I'm kofer be'ikar. God is not an ikar in my life. I let him interfere. I let him come into my life, tell me what to do. But if it's too uncomfortable, forget it. That not. This, I have more important things in life to worry about than Borer. People say that too. Can't do everything. So you can be a 99% Haredi Jew in every area, which doesn't rub you the wrong way. But if in that one area where you don't want to improve, and everybody has some area in Yiddishkeit that does not rub them the right way. For some people it's kashrus, right? I'm not interested in, you know, knowing this hashgacha, that hashgacha, right? If it says it's kosher, right, and that's good enough for me, even if it has a K somewhere on the label, even in the name of the product, it's good enough for me, that's kosher enough for me. I don't want to know that this is no good and that's no good and bugs and things. I didn't worry about that last week. My parents didn't worry about that. I'm not worrying about it either. So that's one area where people don't want to improve, kashrus. So for some people it's sneers. Kashrus, they'll be makbid on every little thing and check every label and only use good hashgachas. Sneers? Nah, I cover my hair, cover my knees, cover my elbows. Nah, what's it called? I didn't do it last week. I'm not doing it next week. Right? This is not something. I'm not going to change my wardrobe because this is no good or that's no. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to learn about it. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to feel guilty. I don't want rabbis to tell me because those rabbis are no good anyway. And you have to be on one of these levels, otherwise you'll feel guilty, and people don't like to feel guilty. For some people, it's business ethics. I stole from people last week, I'm going to steal this week. I cheated people last week, I don't want to know from this. And you convince yourself that it's okay if you don't learn. Right? Well, it's okay to cheat Goyim, which is not the case. Right? And non-frum Jews, they're like Goyim. And most frum Jews are a bunch of fakers, so they're also like Goyim. So everybody's like Goyim, can cheat them all. I convinced myself that, you know, that it's okay to do. I don't want to learn. I don't want to know. Right? So you have to be on one of these seven levels. It applies to every single one of us. How did I know that? I once gave this shiur to a bunch of Israeli Beis Yaakov in Hebrew. Israeli Beis Yaakov principals and teachers. Really frum ladies. Some were Litvish, some were Hasidish. And I said to myself before the shiur, maybe I'm making a mistake. These people aren't going to understand a word I'm saying. Not because of language. They never heard of people like this. I mean, like, you come from America, and even though you're young, I'm sure that you know there are people like this on these seven levels. Okay? Really, if we look in the mirror, we can see that we're people like that. But it's easier to see in other people. And I said to myself, these women are so removed from this kind of behavior that they probably won't even know what I'm talking about. Why am I wasting my time telling them about this? And I said to myself, it's good that they should know that the phenomenon exists in the world. They should know what it is. I finished giving the shiur, and this elderly Beis Yaakov principal, Chassidish lady, comes over to me, and she says, Harav, you were talking to me. I said, if you think I was talking to you, then you probably didn't understand a word I was talking about. She said, no, talking to me. I understood every word you were talking about, and it's me. I said, what are you talking about? She said, I belong to a sect of Hasidim who are different than most Hasidim. Most Hasidim hold that women have to cover their hair not with a shetel alone. They have to wear a covering over the shetel, a hat, something like that. A shetel, right, a wig is not enough. You have to wear a covering over the wig. And that's most Hasidim. Our Rebbe holds that you don't have to wear a covering over the wig. We hold that you can wear a shekel just like the Litvish women wear just a wig. That's what we do. And fine. My daughter got married a few months ago. And I see during Sheva Brachas, she's not putting on a shekel. She only wears a tichel. And we bought her a shekel, so I'm wondering, why didn't she put the shekel on? I figured maybe she's busy and too much trouble with all the Sheva Brachas, so I didn't say anything. After the Sheva Brachas, first Shabbos, I see she's not putting on a shekel. For Shabbos, just a tichel. Next Shabbos, the same thing. Finally, I said to her, something wrong with your shekel? Why are you not wearing a shekel? She said, my husband and I discussed it, and we decided that we want to be extra careful, and since there are people who hold that wearing a shekel is not okay, especially Hasidim, right, I'm going to only wear a tichel. I'm not going to wear the shekel. And when she said that to me, I started thinking to myself, what kind of fanatic is she? What is this? Who does she think she is? Right? Why didn't she do what everybody else is doing? And it bothered me. Why didn't I think the opposite? Why didn't I say, wow, I'm proud of her. She wants to be extra careful, right? I don't do that, but I'm proud that she wants to even be more firm than me. Why did I look at her like some kind of fanatic? Now I understand it. Because I thought to myself, subconsciously, that if I had to do that, if tomorrow the Rebbe said, you can't wear a shekel anymore, I'd resist it. I wouldn't want to change. And therefore, she made me feel guilty. And I didn't want to feel guilty. So I made her into a monster, into a fanatic. Now I understand why. So I said to myself, if it applies to this lady, then it applies to everybody. And I even discovered maybe it applies to me too. In any case, we can all find, and there's a litmus test. You don't have to do every chumrah that everybody does. In fact, some you don't have to ever do. You don't hold that it's not a proper thing. I'll give you an example. There is a chumrah that some Hasidim have, that women shave their head. Okay? They shave their head. For mikvah reasons. This way there's no chance that a hair could be out of the mikvah because there is no hair. Right? So they're bald. Okay. If my wife ever decided to be machmer like that, she'd probably be finding another husband. We don't hold from that. Right? And we're not looking forward to the day that we'll be able to be mekayim that chumrah, right? Yeah, I hope my wife's not looking forward to that day, but I surely am not. And that's what's it called? That's okay. On the other hand, I can respect somebody who holds that that is halachically a chumrah, a positive thing, right? And respect them for doing it. But if I look at them and make them into monsters, these people are off the wall. Well, shaving your wife's head or whatever, right? Not that I have to do it, but why do I have to say like that? Why can't I say, you know, according to what they hold, they're doing what they think is halachically okay, and there is some basis for it. I'm impressed with them. I wouldn't do it. I don't think I have to do it, but I'm impressed with the fact that they're doing something uncomfortable, right, that they hold is halachically necessary, or at least a good chumrah. Fine. But if I look at them and I say, well, they're a bunch of fanatics, you know why? Because I feel guilty. Because if I would have to do it, okay, if tomorrow my Rosh Hashiva would say, you know, I changed my mind, I think all women should shave their heads, I wouldn't do it. And if I wouldn't do it, that means I wouldn't want to improve. Then I don't want to feel guilty if somebody else does it, even if I hold I don't have to do it, but I know that if I would have to do it, I'd feel I wouldn't do it, then I have to make them into monsters. So if you want to know, not everybody can become a tzaddik overnight. Okay? For instance, I'll give you an example. Right? I would love not to speak any Lashon Hara, to be the Chafetz Chaim. Okay? I remember when I was 14 or 15, I read a book about the Chafetz Chaim, one of the first in English, it was really in Yiddish, they translated English from Rabbi Yosher about the Chafetz Chaim. And as a teen, I was really impressed, and I probably didn't speak Lashon Hara for at least a day or two. I mean, nothing. Right? Made a tremendous impression. So, if a person says, you know what, I really would like to be like the Chafetz Chaim, but I can't change overnight. So I'm going to do it slowly. I'm going to stop speaking Lashon Hara that really hurts people. And then I'm going to try to not speak Lashon Hara that even doesn't hurt people, but, you know, just embarrasses them or something like that. And I'm going to really work on it. And it may take me years to really get to the madrig I'd like to be on, but I'm working on it. Can't change overnight, but I'm working on it slowly. How do you know if you're fooling yourself or not? How do you know that you really don't want to change, and you're saying that you're going to do it slowly, and you're really not interested in ever changing completely, even if it's 1,000 years? How do you know? I'll tell you how you know. Look at somebody who you claim you would like to get to that level someday, who's on that level now. How do you look at them? If you admire them, then you know you're on the right path. If you look at them and say, wow, they're off the wall, they're a bunch of fanatics, right? Well, look how careful she is not to speak about people or whatever, she's nuts. Then you know you're not on the path because you feel guilty. And you would not, you don't want to feel guilty about what you're not doing, so you're making the other person into a monster. That is the litmus test. You may not be holding there, but you really feel that you would like to get there someday, then you'll admire the people who are there. If not, then you'll degrade them. Yes?
Can't you feel guilty but still admire the people? You feel guilty because you can't reach the level. But if you admire, you don't think...
If you admire them, that means that you are prone to change and would someday like to do them. If you would never want to do it, and you know that you should, then inevitably you're not going to admire the people. Right? It's almost a vadai litmus test in the thing. Okay, I think it's something to think about, and it's so frighteningly true, those seven levels, that it applies again to everybody, in some way or another. And therefore a person, again, you're not going to change and be a tzaddik overnight. Halavai, you should. But that's not realistic. But it's an ongoing, lifelong quest of slowly improving. And if you're doing it, you're moving up, then you're not moving down. If you're not moving up and you think that you'll just stagnate, inevitably you're going to go down and go down to the bargain basement, right, on that down escalator. So... something to take into consideration. Okay, I had two other things that I wanted to speak about, but I think I'd rather leave you to think about this instead of mixing you up with some other things. So the 9 minutes that we have extra, you can walk out and think about it. It's kedai.